honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a fascinating visit today with 95-year-old Joe Pintacura. He told us about surviving Typhoon Cobra, or Halsey's Typhoon, as it's been called. Joe was aboard the destroyer USS Craven. Damage to the ship forced them to go back for repairs and eventually all the way to the Brooklyn Naval Yard, which allowed him to marry his sweetheart, Shirley.
So you get married in June, and as you said, your ship would eventually go across the Atlantic to England. But where were you on VJ Day? What was that like?
I remember, you know, the captain making an announcement and everybody just cheering. I think we were still in the Mediterranean. It was a joyful day. And then we were wondering, well, how soon can we get out of it? Get discharged? Can we go home?
Never as soon as you want. And we touched on, you know, your bombardment of these islands, you guys being the bait that pulls in to try to get the guns to come out, going through the typhoon. Were there any other experiences aboard ship that are particularly memorable for you?
Yes, there's actually a couple. We shot down a Japanese plane, and for some reason they decided to pick up the pilot and the co-pilot. A bunch of the guys jumped in the ocean to save these two Japanese guys. The pilot actually drowned, but they still got his body. And the other guy, the co-pilot, they managed to save. Well, we had to bury the pilot at sea, and the co-pilot put him in the sick bay. So that was my job to take care of him. So they actually put him in my bunk, my sleeping bunk. And I had to sleep on the floor, and the idea was to get him eventually across to the carrier so they could question him. Well, here's the part that you won't believe. I have to make all these motions when he's talking about eating, going to the bathroom, you know, giving them a shot, taking care of them. I had the doctor and the chief pharmacist mate and a first class pharmacist mate there to help, but I got all the menial jobs. I had to, you know, take them to the bathroom and stuff like that, feed them. And I had to make all these motions because I figured he couldn't even speak English. And we had a guy on our ship. The oldest guy that was on our ship was a guy that had a job as a boilermaker. He was the one that did a lot of the welding when we hit the typhoon and stuff. And I didn't get to see him a whole lot. And he was kind of a crabby guy. The time I did see me, when he came to the sick bay, it was like, you know, don't talk to me. So he's coming to the sick bay to get some treatment. And he looks at this Japanese guy and he says, "I know you. You and I got drunk together in San Francisco." Honest, and I thought, this is a bunch of baloney, you know, no way. And the guy starts talking English to him. And then I met at the guy, the Japanese guy, because I said, "You son of a gun, you pretended you couldn't speak English and you knew everything that everybody's saying around here." And it turns out he was an old time, I mean, he'd been in the Air Force like maybe 15, 20 years and been to America many times. And so these guys are reminiscing about San Francisco. And the next thing you know, I'm joining a conversation because I'm taking care of him. He's telling me about his family and his kids and stuff, and we kind of became friends. So that memory stayed with me, that here I've got an enemy who's kind of a friend now. And when we were in the Mediterranean, I had to take some patients to the hospital there, and I called for a driver, a car. And a car pulls up, and a guy gets out of the car, and he's wearing a PW, prisoner of war jacket. He's a German, speaks English. And now I'm hopping in a car with a German enemy. And then I find out he's got a family. He's talking all about his family because I was with him the whole day. So now I got this German friend and I got this Japanese friend. Why the heck did we go to war?
Sounds like that really altered your perspective a little.
Oh, God, yeah. Now when I see the, like I say, I worked in the school district for 21 years. And there's exchange students. And when I see Japanese exchange students, you know, I can't help but welcome them with open arms. And the Germans, Italians, all exchange students, I make an extra effort to welcome them. Because then I had a different outlook about the war. It was like they had to go, we had to go, and why?
And the Japanese co-pilot on your ship Do you happen to remember his name?
No, I was just a kid. I should have gotten more information. I should have just been smart enough to, so I would have that for memories, but I didn't. Everything was just kind of speeding along in those days.
I don't know if you have some memories of this, or I'm just asking you to speculate, but have you ever thought about what it must have been like for your mother to have four boys in the service?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you bet. Because, there was another family that lost five children, the Sullivan brothers. They all went on one ship, and that ship got sunk. And that was a big news everywhere. And it made, particularly in my case with the three elder brothers, but one was in below the equator, the other one was in the States, and one was on a carrier. He was on the Enterprise. He was a radio man and gunner. He saw quite a bit of action because those guys had to, fly and drop bombs.
You're talking about Roy?
Yeah.
So he was on SBDs?
He was on the Enterprise carrier, and he's on a plane they call the Avenger.
A TBF.
Yeah. With a big belly. When we got out of that typhoon and we went to Pearl Harbor, the Enterprise was there. So I went over to visit them. And would you know, that was on a day they were taking off for a trial bombing mission. They were carrying two 500-pound bombs, and they were aiming at a target that was being towed by a ship in the ocean. And the radio man and gunner, my brother was a radio man and gunner, but they had a turret gunner. And the turret gunner said, if he wants to go up with you, I won't be doing anything. And if it's okay with the pilot, he can take my place. And the pilot says, yeah, you can go. And so I went up with him on that practice runs. And, man, that was a real treat because they did a lot of practice dives before they dropped the bombs. And they would, you're up there in that plane that suddenly gets in formation. You see all these other planes in line. Then they peel off one at a time. I was in heaven. It was great. And my brother Roy was old hat because he'd done it so many times.
What a thrill ride. Did you have guys either from your ship or that you had gotten to know before or during the war that didn't come home from the war the way you and your brothers got to?
We lost one guy while he was sitting on a depth charge while we were in some rough sea. I don't know. But the ship made a quick turn and we lost him and he drowned. It was a terrible way to... We went back to try to find him. We just couldn't find him. But other than that, most of those guys on that ship died after they came home, either from illness or old age. But we had a lot of reunions, and it was nice to see most of those guys. We had one guy who was so angry at the Japanese that every reunion he would say, "How many of you guys have bought Japanese cars? What's wrong with you? Why are you buying Japanese cars? There are enemies in the war, and you're still our enemies." Of course, we let him rattle on because we're all friends now. No more enemies.
You mentioned working for the school district, North Monterey County, for a couple decades. You've also been back to do presentations. You were just showing me some of the PowerPoint you prepared for students there. And on one of the pictures, I saw an honor flight jacket. So you got to go back to Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And see that National World War II Memorial. What was that like for you? What was that experience all about?
Well, that was a real treat. Not only just for me, but I went with about 30 guys. All World War II guys, and they're all, most of them were either my age or there was even a couple older. And just to be together with them, even if we didn't go anywhere, was a real honor and treat. But when we got to Washington, and we got to see, the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima, it brought back memories that of what our mostly Army and Marines went through. Being on the ship, if you're going to die, you're going to die clean. Those guys, they really had it tough. And it was great that we all could be together and visit all these places in Washington, D.C. We had a motorcycle escort. We were on buses that were zooming through Washington. It was a special treat. It went all too fast because it was just one weekend. And my son Gary, who was a Vietnam veteran, by the way, was my escort, you might say. He's the one that pushed me around in the wheelchair all the time. They won't let you walk. They make sure you can survive the trip. And so he's pushing me constantly in a wheelchair here, there, and everywhere. And he was also helping when the buses got to each place, he would get out and help, line up the wheelchairs. He really enjoyed it.
And I'm just curious for you, because at that World War II memorial, you know, it's honoring you and your brothers and 16 million Americans who served and came home, but also 406,000 plus who didn't come home. And they have those gold stars there to represent that giant number. What kinds of thoughts or memories or emotions were going through your mind when you were there at the National World War II Memorial?
You know, I have that in my PowerPoint presentation because I'm one of these kids that mostly these seniors and juniors in high school to realize that kids their age were not much older than were dying. There's 400,000 plus kids. And I tell them that I'm 95 years old. I got to enjoy all these years from 1946 to now, had a family, and all those kids, all those crosses you see, they didn't have that. They lost it, and they did it for all of us. And so, you know, I want them to, you know, to feel it, because it's pretty tough. Yeah, all over the world, they got those graveyards.
I don't think anybody can say it any better than you just did. And I know, you know, we talked about Shirley. You mentioned the 71 years before you lost her. Whenever I meet someone who's been married that long, I like to ask them what their secret was. What do you think was the key to the longevity of your marriage?
Well, you know, there were so many sayings about that. One of them that's popular that I think was pretty good, that kind of brings it to the point, is that I made all the important decisions, and she told me what was important.
And, you know, you've got, if I remember this right, 4 kids and 8 grandkids and 11 great-grandkids and even a great-great-grandchild now, none of whom would be here if you didn't come home from World War II. When you think about all this life that you've led, 95 years, what would you say you're most proud of?
Well, that marriage of mine and my Shirley, again, the secret to that marriage was when I wanted her to be my wife, I did everything I could to show her my best side. And then after we got married and started to get into some heavy-duty financial problems, it dawned on me that, hey, I was starting to lose that. I still want her to be in my life. And so I went back to what I used to do in the beginning. I started opening car doors for her. You just got to never quit courting. And as long as you court her, she'll love you. And I'm proud of that. And I teach my kids to do that. And I see my kids doing that. Your job is to make her happy and your kids happy and yourself happy all your life. It's going to be tough, but you can do it.
You mentioned her coming up to Brooklyn to get married when you came in. But what about when you got to see her again and now the war is over and you can finally start your life together? Where was that and what was that moment like?
It was Chicago, Illinois. When I came home and we did like you see in the movies, we just rushed at each other. We hugged each other. We kissed. We couldn't break away. My family was there behind me because she went actually to my mother's house, my mother and father's house. And I came right from the train station there. I just came into the front hall and then gone into the front room of the house where everybody's waiting. And just the two of us in that front hall, just we couldn't break away. Everybody was pounding on the door. Come on, we want to see you too. And no way. We just was, I think we're there for like over an hour. And they were saying, come on. We want to see you too. Oh, yeah. We're just so happy. So happy. Just wish my honey was here to enjoy the conversation with you. When I lost her, I thought I'd be right behind. I thought I'd go too, because without her, I just lost everything. But the kids pulled me through. All my kids come to the rescue, my grandkids. So I'm still here, plugging away.
Joe Pintacura, he'll celebrate birthday number 96 next month in Prunedale, California. That's all the time we have on today's program, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.